Okay, I call this meeting of the Long-Term Care Division to order. I want to thank everybody for coming. We need to, I would entertain a motion to move the minutes from March 11th, 2019. Cool. Representative Munson moves the minutes from March 11th. Everybody in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, minutes are adopted. Okay, today, members, we have four bills on the agenda. The first two bills deal with personal care attendance and rate formulas and compensation. And then the last two bills deal with income standards for those who are on medical assistance, and those will be presented by Representative Loeffler. So I'm going to hand the gavel over to Representative Lippert. He's going to take over the meeting while I present House File 1225.
Madam Chair, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 1225 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Long-Term Care Division report.
Thank you. And I believe you have an author's amendment?
I do. We have a DE1. I'd like to move the DE1 amendment to House File 1225.
Okay. So the Chair moves House File, the DE1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed to the author's amendment? Okay, author's amendment is adopted. Madam Chair, please proceed with presenting your bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1225 deals with personal care attendant services, or PCA services, and we all know that the PCA services are one of the most cost-effective ways to provide individuals with disabilities and older adults the opportunity to live safely and with dignity in their homes and with their families. We also know that while working as a PCA, it can be very rewarding, but it's also incredibly difficult work. PCAs help individuals with some of the most basic necessities of life, and in many instances, they also assist with very intimate activities. These are vital services needed to keep individuals safe in their homes and out of higher cost residential facilities, and to support these individuals to live their lives with dignity. However, unlike many other services provided in our market economy, for the vast majority of the nearly 43,000 individuals receiving PCA services today, the state of Minnesota sets the reimbursement rate and thus in effect wages for these services. Therefore, unlike most other industries facing a workforce shortage, the PCA services community is not able to simply adjust their own services and rates in response to economic trends. The average PCA makes just about $11.78 an hour. That low wage, especially when combined with the difficulty of the work, makes it hard for PCA agencies and individuals receiving care to recruit and retain workers. This is not a new problem, and House File 1225 is not the only piece of legislation you're likely to hear this session that attempts to address this vital issue. However, this legislation is different in its approach. In past years, we have heard proposals seeking rate increases for PCA services. That is because PCA services are reimbursed at a historical rate established years ago that has subsequently ticked up or down each biennium based on the finances of the state. In the last decade, the rate has increased $1.16 an hour, an average of less than 12 cents a year. House File 1225 would fundamentally change the way the state pays for PCA services by using workforce and Minnesota market data to recognize the actual costs of providing these services and provide the legislature a framework to, over time, build those costs into the system. It would also allow the data to be reevaluated every 2 years so that the PCA program is responsive to the needs of Minnesota, and would maximize our limited resources and help as many people as possible live safely and work as independently as possible in their communities. This bill is not about a simple rate increase. It's about establishing a long overdue, data-driven, evidence-informed rate-setting system for this most critical program that supports 43,000 Minnesotans with disabilities and older adults to live a quality life with safety and dignity. Mr. Chair, I have a testifier here who's ready to testify.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have my testimony available, which I believe the page might have to hand out for you, too. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bangsberg. I'm the board chair of the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living. As some of you may recall, I have testified for the last 2 years regarding the critical shortage of the personal care assistance for people with disabilities, particularly those with high needs. This shortage has gotten worse, not better. Last summer, the state's Olmstead subcabinet approved the recommendations of its direct care shortage work group report. Following these recommendations, our group of consumers, stakeholders, providers, and advocates was created to reform the PCA program in order to keep it from imploding upon itself. With technical assistance from the Department of Human Services, the PCA Reform Coalition put together a proposal to address the workforce crisis to make the program sustainable. This proposed legislation addresses four basic essential elements or priorities. First is to establish a framework to pay personal care assistants a fair wage. This framework is based on two data-driven assumptions. First, as Representative Schultz had articulated, is to utilize the standard occupational classification codes published by the Bureau of Labor Statistics to develop a wage component. Second, it's to incorporate a competitive workforce factor, comparing PCA services with other jobs in the economy, based on education, training, and experience. PCA rates are currently determined only by the legislature, not the market, resulting in PCA wages falling far behind. This new framework will establish an objective system for determining PCA rates. Second, to build on the existing enhanced rate for PCAs who provide care to people who are most severely disabled and therefore find it more difficult to find and retain staff. Third is to strengthen the provider community by supporting both the personal care choice and the traditional PCA organizations. And finally, to incorporate transparent best practices in order to improve quality and ensure integrity in the PCA program. To be clear, the PCA program is not part of the disability waiver rate system for people with disabilities, so it is not aided by those reforms. Our legislation is built on the principle that PCA should be paid the same as those in DWRS, with forecasted increases to keep up with the economy. Being a PCA is a rewarding but very difficult job. PCA wages have to keep up with the market economy, or the PCA program that started 40 years ago will implode. Failing to act will force thousands of clients who rely on this very critical service to move into more costly institutional settings like a nursing home. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bangsberg. Madam Chair, you have more testifiers.
I think we have two more testifiers.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Dina Belial. And thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am the president of the Minnesota First Provider Alliance, a statewide association of PCA provider agencies with 100-plus members. I'm also a member of the PCA Reform Coalition, and I run a small PCA agency from my office in Lakeland, Minnesota. But most importantly, I am the mother to my son, Anthony. Anthony is 38 years old and severely disabled. He receives 12 and a half hours of PCA services per day. He has very high needs and requires complex care, and he's nonverbal. My son functions best with a consistent routine. He gets very anxious if we deviate from his routine. Having a new PCA come into our home can be difficult. Because he is nonverbal, it takes a long time for someone to learn how he communicates. The way he gives you a look or moves his fingers all indicate what he is trying to tell us. As his mother, I know the look and the movement, and I know just what he wants. It takes time for someone new to learn that. It also takes time to train a PCA on how to do his complex care, which include his bowel programs, seizures, and swallowing disorders. So you can understand the struggles we face and the importance of having PCAs that are able to stay with us. A low turnover of staff is critical for many reasons. Familiarity with the client creates the ability to detect a potential health concern early, and it is an important component in preventing a traumatic and costly visit to the ER or ICU. My agency provides services to individuals who are enrolled both in the PCA Choice and the traditional PCA program. Even with the flexibility that having both programs provide, the ongoing staffing crisis means I have had to tell families that I'm unable to find PCAs to work for them. One of these families, whose parents are their caregivers, is facing the very real possibility of having to be moved to a resident home. One of the parents has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and we are unable to find a PCA to work. This is not only terribly sad, but difficult for the other parent, but is extremely costly alternative to having a PCA come into their home. As a provider who is also a mother, I can tell you there is nothing more frustrating than to having to tell clients that we cannot help them. I believe House File 1225 would enable us to address the challenges of those already caring for the most vulnerable and assist PCA providers to reach other potential workers who have never before considered working as a PCA because of the low wages and lack of benefits. PCAs need to earn a livable wage. They need to be able to pay their rent and mortgage and put food on the table. They should also be able to save for their own unexpected emergencies and for their future. They should be able to address their own medical issues that could prevent them from working. We must acknowledge personal care assistance as a necessary and valued career by creating a regular, increasing, viable, livable wage and benefit potential for this type of work. The Minnesota First Provider Alliance and the PCA Reform Coalition have worked for months now on a variety of proposals and reforms intended to bring stability and sustainability to the PCA program. We are all desperately working together to find solutions to the workforce shortage and to establish best practice and higher integrity standards in our industry. But we need your help now. We can't afford to wait any longer. Clients' health and safety are at risk. House File 1225 is an important step in addressing the workforce shortage in our industry and ensuring that thousands of families like mine throughout the state can care for their loved one. Thank you so much for your support and consideration today.
Thank you, Ms. Belial. I believe Matthew Bergeron is the next testifier on our list. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Matthew Bergeron. I'm an attorney with Larkin Hoffman, and I represent the Minnesota First Provider Alliance. I really can't add anything as to the merits or the needs beyond the testifiers you've heard, but because it is a rather complicated proposal, I'm here to help answer questions should members have any about the details.
Okay, thank you. Is there further testimony? Others who would like to testify? Yes, may come forward. Welcome.
Please be members of the committee. Chair Schultz, my name is Mark Hughes, former member of the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities. As you can see today, this is a very serious and current issue in the disability community. Now, I have a suggestion. For years, we've heard that they're not paying enough for the PCAs, and I was wondering if we can't, when we're training the PCAs, count it as education, and Their years of service times the education should be put on a pay scale degree. And I think that would work. And it, I also wonder if when the governors are talking about a surplus, when Governor Dayton left office, there was a surplus. When Governor Walz entered office, there was a surplus. These are vulnerable adults that we must take care of immediately. And I can't tell you the magnitude and how serious this this current problem is. And I hope this never happens to you or any of your family who might use a PCA service. So I hope you'll vote yes on affording these people great independence, good health care, and successful employment or retirement, whatever the case may be. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there others today? I can't tell if someone is coming down to the microphone as well. Okay. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dupree Edwards. I don't see what partners in policymaking, but I want to try to say for PCAs and direct support staff to give them a living wage, and it affects the staff turnover too for hiring people and stuff like that, and it's just shortage staff everywhere. You know, it's just hard because a lot of people are not going to work for $12 an hour, you know, unless they really care about the job, they're really passionate about the job, and stuff like that. So I really feel like we should take this subject very seriously. Last year, there was a 7% cut last summer in this type of situation. And it was, they really need the... because they're talented, they're valued, they support us, they deserve to have a livable wage, like the other testifiers said, to put food on the table, to take care of their families, you know. And everybody with disabilities, you know, really appreciate what the PCAs and the direct support staff does. And I really wish you guys could take this in consideration and really help, you know, our support, because they support us. They come in here and help us with every need that we can, and they do the best that they could do. And I really feel like we, you know, we need that. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. Are there others who want to testify today? Seeing none. Discussion, questions for the author and testifiers? Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to say to Chair Schultz, thank you for bringing this bill forward. In our community of Plymouth, we have a great deal of need for PCAs who are paid a wage where they can also support their families. But this is a matter of life and death, and the shortage of PCAs in my own community is huge. And so anything that we can do to alleviate this struggle for our families is critical. So it's not really a question. It's just a thank you for raising this issue, for bringing this bill forward so that we can serve the families who need help and who are actually trying to do their very best to care for their families. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleaborn. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we all know that this industry has been in crisis for a number of years, and I truly appreciate you bringing the bill forward. I guess the only reservation I have is it doesn't start till 2020, and we know it should have started several years ago. Thank you.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schultz. I've carried this bill in the past. And know very well how important we care for, provide PCAs. Mr. Bangsberg, good to see you again. And, you know, this is so difficult because it isn't just about paying people It is really hard to even find people. Members, I have a business that I've known the young lady for a long time. She owns a business, and she often gives her PCA away. Jeff knows her very well. PCA away so that her clients can have somebody to care for them, and she goes without. And she seems to manage okay, but she does have some family around that can stop in and help her. But as we know, this is very costly, and making sure we have stability is really important. So I'm wondering, we talked about there is a difference between DWRS and PCA service. Maybe either Representative Schultz or Mr. Bergeron, you want to explain the differences in those two things?
Chair Schultz?
Maybe the short version. Sorry.
So, sure, Representative Teal, Mr. Chair. So there's a rate formula system in the DWRS and the waiver system. Although someone with similar training could be paid both in the waiver DWRS system and in the PCA system. So what this bill is trying to do is make it more consistent in how we establish a rate formula for the PCA system that mimics very similar to what we've been doing in the waiver rate system. So there's more consistency. So someone, a PCA, currently is paid a lot less than someone that's getting paid through the waiver rate system. So here we're trying to really level that pay wages and make it more consistent in how we create a formula to pay for these services that obviously are desperately needed in everyone's district community and have been underpaid and really undervalued because they're not paid, there's significant turnover. And so the state has to address this as fast as possible, and you do have a fiscal note in your packet on what this will cost to increase and change just from paying a wage based on the amount of money the state has to paying a wage that reflects the competitive workforce in the state of Minnesota, and then requiring reporting like we do in the waiver rate system of actual wages paid so we have real data going forward into the future so we can base wages on that real data. And then Mr. Berg can pick, if he wants to explain the fiscal note or follow up with something I missed, or Mr. Bergeron here.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know that I have anything to follow up on. I just, as Representative Schultz mentioned, you'll see there's a fiscal note that shows costs of about $35.6 million in 2021 and significantly about $115 million in the tails. This fiscal note is pretty much useless as soon as it came out because there are significant technical amendments that still have to be done, but it gives you some idea of the scope of the cost as you go out in later years.
Representative Teal, are you?
Oh, I was going to ask another question about unionization of PCAs.
Go ahead.
Okay. PCAs were unionized in 2013 after the legislature declared them to be state employees. So I'm wondering, you know, how would this base wage increase or index, excuse me, and the rate methodology be influenced by the PCA negotiations, union negotiations? How would that affect?
You want to answer that?
Mr. Bergeron?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel. So only a portion of PCAs in the state of Minnesota are subject to the collective bargaining agreement. The rate negotiated as part of that process currently applies across the board. However, the benefits and the wages that are negotiated as part of the CBA process only apply to those members in the collective bargaining unit through the PCA choice program as opposed to the traditional program. The way this statutory framework is designed to work is to work alongside of that, so that the data being used in the framework would set a realization of what some of the costs are into the system, and then that would be information, including some built-in changes to compensation, would then be subject to the traditional collective bargaining process that we've seen over the last two biennium.
Representative Peel?
Well, I'm trying to mentally think about my own districts one of their PCA services. They're not unionized, and they have real problems providing any benefits at all because half of their employees work through the I'm going to even have a hard time with the group, the American Indian group that she works with, because she tries to provide the Red Lake Nation clients with actual PCAs that are part of, and they have their own care benefit system, and so she can't even provide her other employees because it cuts them in half, and there's just some real problems there with even thinking about doing benefits, much less paying them a better rate. So, and she has some concerns about some of the fraud that she has caught and reported and has not been stopped. And what bothers me most about that is that takes away from the people who really need it. Yeah. And that is really concerning. But that's just a statement, and I'm interested in where we're going with this. And if we can afford this longer term, I know it's very important for our people, those who need PCAs. It's just really important. And Jeff and I haven't had a chance to talk, but I got my own client at home, so
Mr. Bergeron.
He takes care of himself better now. But
Mr. Bergeron or Chair Schultz, any response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, the way the framework is built to recognize costs, you know, employee benefits and things like that in the system, and recognize what it would cost to provide that and build that into the eventual rate, it does not dictate how any of those are spent. There's no mandates that those dollars be attributed to benefits. That just goes to the base rate. That for members of the collective bargaining unit, the collective bargaining governs what benefits are mandated. Outside of that, in the traditional PCA, it's the cost of those benefits are part of the rate calculations, but it's not tying. There are no mandates on how it's distributed by the employers.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I'm trying to do the comparison in my mind, what we know is that people who are in need of services are in need of services. I think we can all agree on that statement. We also know that people will need to be paid to care for the people who are in need of services. What I'm hearing that this bill does, and we will either pay for their care in a nursing facility or we will pay for their care in a nursing home. So if we pass this restructured system, it would allow us to pay for their care under this structure while they remain at home. So when I'm evaluating this, I want to make sure I have it right in my mind. So if we take the individual and we move them to the nursing home, the costs will greatly exceed the $114 million that we're seeing in the tails. Is that correct?
Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleavorn. Yes, we're going to save the state money in the long run. The longer individuals with disabilities can stay as independent as possible in their own home. So in the waiver system, which is not the system we're talking about here, but that is specifically set up to avoid institutional care in a nursing home. So that's why you get a waiver to use that money not for a nursing home care, but to stay within a home for those services. So that's a waiver from using those Medicaid dollars in a nursing home. In this model, PCAs, it's to make sure that they're as independent as possible and they're getting services they need.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Representative Cleavorn.
So I just want to make sure that, for the record, we are saying this is truly, while it is a huge dollar amount, it is actually a savings, in addition to allowing people to live independently in their own home with the dignity that comes with that as well. Is that correct?
Chair Schultz.
Yes, I think that's a good summary of that. It could be potentially cost saving if we can avoid the institutional care.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for bringing this forward. My sister uses a PCA, and several of my customers also do. So I know it's at a critical stage in most parts of the state. But I was just wondering on the fiscal note, I was taking a look at that. Why does it jump so from fiscal 2022 to 2023? Are we assuming there'll be more PCAs, or is it just the additional pay, the increase in pay? Or maybe Mr. Berg could address that.
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, either I or Representative Schultz kind of outlined it at the beginning. It both provides a methodology and a competitive workforce factor to boost wages based on actual reported wage data, and it then inflates it in the future that will happen. So you start out with a new cost to go to the new system, and then you are looking at actual cost data based on the wages of people in the industry and adjusting upwards based on what's being paid.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Berg, so you're assuming that increase with the number of PCAs we have right now, correct? Or is that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, no. I mean, in any situation, and I haven't had a chance to go through a lot of detail in this fiscal note, it just came out, but in any situation on forecasted programs, the department takes a look at what will the effect on utilization be from the changes. Okay. So I can't tell you without talking to them or reading this more, but there's certainly a utilization change as well as changes to the reimbursement. There are multiple factors in there.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grunhagen, if you look at page 6 of the fiscal note, you can see that the rate calculation, the PCA rates are expected to increase by those percentages in that first table, 2020, 3.2%, and 2022, 9.5%. That's because both wages are going to be going up because of that comparative workforce factor, which also increases over time.
So, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Chair Schultz, for that information. So do we need a federal waiver on this?
Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grunhagen. I think we do need federal approval, but I think, do you know that, Matt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, the majority of the bill would just require a state plan amendment. There is a piece as it relates to the elderly waiver program that would require a waiver amendment, is my understanding in conversations with DHS. So it's federal approval, but not a
waiver,
a particularly cumbersome one.
Okay.
Representative.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so does this stand a better chance than that 7% that we tried to get across?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, this is, like as we mentioned before, this is an entirely different population, but it's also structured in a different way, having lived through that issue to hopefully, and we're pretty confident not to be in that same problem as far as federal approval.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none. Chair Schultz, will you renew your motion?
I renew my motion to have this laid over as part of the division report. And I just want to thank members for hearing the bill and for supporting it.
Thank you. The chair lays the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Call forward Representative Considine present the next bill.
Okay, Representative Considine, I move House File 1298 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Please introduce yourself and introduce your bill, Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jack Considine, bill author. I'd like to go into just a little bit of the history. This is actually my fifth bill concerning PCAs. My first one was for the 5% campaign, never got a hearing. My next one was for 10%, 5%, never got a hearing. Then I thought I'd simplify things, just 75 cents across the board for all PCAs, never got a hearing. Then I went back to, well, and then I was told by DHS because of the, some of the federal mandates, they couldn't do a straight 75 cents. Went to 4.7%, which was roughly the equivalent. My bill never got a hearing. Last year, did manage to get into the committee by using Representative Hamilton's bill that hadn't gotten a hearing, but I got it in. It was voted down in committee. This has been a long-standing frustration at the end of each of the last two sessions. I've gotten up on the floor and railed about this. At this point, I have a little trouble even talking about it without getting a little angry. Trying to keep things simple. One of the things that I haven't heard mentioned is at the end of 2016 that there were 8,000 positions that were not being filled, and at the end of 2017 that number had risen to 9,000. We are in a crisis. We continue to be in a crisis. We heard horror stories the last couple years on HHS finance of PCAs quitting in the middle of their shift and leaving, of quadriplegics being stranded. Sounded like something out of an Edgar Allan Poe novel. Anyway, I've tried to make this just as simple as possible, but even this year, I came into the Capitol in December, laid out what I thought was a pretty clear path to this, and in January, had a gentleman review it for me and say, no, this isn't doing what you want to do. Sent it back again to the revisor's office, and then on Friday got a call saying, oh, no, some other people are being left out, so I've sent it back. I have a DE-1 amendment that I would like, or I'm sorry, would you move for me?
Sir, Representative Constantine, I move the DE-1 amendment.
Okay. And that is to get the...
We need to vote on it. So
All
in favor of the DE-1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign? Okay, the amendment's adopted. So please speak to your bill, Representative Constantine, as amended.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm trying to keep it really simple, and that is that we will have all PCAs in the state will have a minimum starting wage of $14 an hour. That is a whopping $29,000 a year, and quite frankly, I am embarrassed to try for such a low figure, but it would be a significant raise for most of them. In Greater Minnesota, the average salary is $11 an hour. These are services that are done with kindness and compassion, and I think at some point the state of Minnesota has to make a determination if these are services and values that we uphold. These people right now currently that are supplying these services with kindness, compassion, dedication. I talked to one man that had not had a day off in 5 years. These people are on food stamps to feed their own children. It is disgrace. We should all be embarrassed about that. Now, the nice thing about my bill is I think it will fit really well in with Representative Chair Schultz's bill. My bill, though, would actually start this on July 1st of this year and move people up to, again, a whopping $29,000 a year. Like I said, I start to get a little testy about it about this point. Do we, as a legislature, want to support our developmentally disabled, our mentally ill, our physically disabled, our elderly, at, as was pointed out in Chair Schultz's bill, at a much cheaper alternative so that they can stay in their own homes? To do this, we're going to have to raise their salaries. And I'm glad Chair Schultz went through some of the progression, but they've had $1, 16 in the last 10 years? I mean, there is a certain point where you're going to say our values are such that we believe these people deserve to get paid. And I have a testifier, and I think I'm going to stop now because I start to feel myself getting angry about it again. Mr. Carlisle and PCA, would you please come forward, and we'll come back to it in a second when I compose myself.
Thank you, Representative Considine. So we have Mr. Carlisle here to testify. So just introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Carlisle.
My name is Devon Hodge, and I'm going to be, he broke something up, so I'm going to be doing this.
Do you want to speak into the speaker and maybe have a seat and
sit down?
Okay. Introduce yourself on the microphone so we can
Okay. help. My name is Deborah Housing. My name is Jim Carlisle, Chair Schultz and other committee members and representatives. I wish to thank you for hearing my testimony. I am a mostly retired tax consultant with the support of dedicated caregivers. My disabled wife and I live in our own accessible home in West St. Paul. We need periodic assistance throughout each day from 7 a.m. to 12 midnight. We would not be able to live in our own home without personal care assistance, PCAs, to help us with the ordinary activities of daily living, such as showering, dressing, eating, and all the other necessary tasks of human survival. However, the booming economy and now unemployment are making it almost impossible to recruit qualified personnel who will accept this very responsible work for each minimal compensation. We experienced one example of a critical PCA shortage over the past weekend. Our regular team of four workers is usually scheduled to take certain days at certain times throughout the week. Over the last few days, three of our staff members took days off for various reasons, leaving just one person to fill all the shifts during 4 days. There just aren't any extra PCAs available. I know some people with significant disabilities are struggling without PCAs at all. Others are depending mostly on friends. Just yesterday, the front page of the Star Tribune told one story of a man with cerebral palsy who had to move into full-time nursing home care simply because his caregiver and partner was no longer able to provide his cares at home. They couldn't find anyone willing to work for the pay available. Certainly, our dedicated care worker who commuted 22 miles four times a day to keep us sustained should be fairly rewarded. I'm sure there are many others who deserve recognition for their challenging work with Minnesota citizens with disabilities. For this hardworking caregivers, a $14 per hour minimum wage as proposed in HF 1298 would be a tangible sign of appreciation, and it would help us begin to really address the severe shortage of home care workers all across the state. I am also involved with the support of the SEIU home care contract that is moving separately through the legislature, and I think both bills are important and will really help people like me who just want to have qualified caregivers. These two pieces of legislation might have a slight competitive edge to attract and keep home care workers. They would give a modest boost to the caregivers' income and standard of living, and they would have a good kickstart to the $15 per hour minimum wage scheduled for the metropolitan area in 2 years. Thus, I urge you to strongly support this important legislation, which will benefit both the caregivers and the clients. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Carlisle and Ms. Housley. Thank you for being a PCA and helping Mr. Carlisle in reading his testimony. Really appreciate it.
No worries.
Are there questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Considine.
Thank you. Compose myself a little bit. Mr. Carlisle is an example of someone that continues to contribute to our society with minimal help from a PCA. And there are a lot of people that fall into that category, that they can have productive lives that contribute to their communities with just a minimal amount of help. And take everything away for a second, the other part. In greater Minnesota, this would be an economic engine. There are very few communities that do not have homes or PCAs, and these people that are going to get the raise, they're going to spend the money right there in town at the local grocery store, the local gas station. They're not going to drive to the Twin Cities on $29,000 a year. They're going to continue to shop in their own communities. And also, 90% plus are women. It will help close the gap on women's wages. In the Twin Cities, quite a significant number are people of color. It will help close the gap, the economic gap between our minorities and our majority. This pill should be a no-brainer. This should be something that we all get behind. And again, there's not a person on this committee that I don't believe doesn't share the values of helping the disabled, the mentally ill, the physically disabled, or the elderly. But it's time to put our money where our mouth is and give these people a decent starting wage and then go into the bill that Chair Schultz is saying so that we can continue to do it. In the 80s, when the state hospitals were closed down, there was a promise made that the money would follow the people into the community, and we have not lived up to that.
Okay. Are there questions from members? Representative Grunheim.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Constein, for bringing this forward and highlighting this issue. Mr. Berg, I think the DE does expand the costs quite substantially compared to the initial bill. Could you just comment on that, or is that still pending?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, actually DHS completed a fiscal note on the base bill minutes before the hearing. It didn't even get distributed. It won't be the amendment, you're right, significantly expands it, so we'll have to re-fiscal note it.
Thank you, Mr. Burr. Representative Grunhagen?
Madam Chair, do we know when we'll be getting our targets?
Thank you, Mr. Grunhagen, for that, or Representative Grunhagen, for that question. I am not aware of when the targets will be released, so okay. I'm going to assume shortly. Any other? Oh, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Considine. You've been such a champion on this issue, and I understand your anger. It is righteous anger, and it's heartbreaking that we haven't been able to. Have not been able to make progress on the compensation for the PCAs. About 3 or 4 years ago, we were both, again, on a long-term care committee, and I remember Representative Hamilton at that point had said that, and he has, I don't know whether you call it a hog farm or a swine farm.
He works on a hog farm.
They were, the average pay for that, for a worker there, was $14 an hour. We're talking about human beings here, vulnerable human beings. We need to get something done this year. I mean, we absolutely have to, and thank you for bringing this forward.
Representative Cleborn.
I would just like to say I also thank the representative for bringing this bill forward. It might be a good measure while we wait for your bill to also to kick in. So I would just be in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleveland. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, do we know what the five states around us, do they pay right around $14 too? And are they experiencing shortages or?
Representative Considine.
I can't specifically say that, but across the nation there is shortages. At one point, the Huffington Post did an article about it, and yeah, it seems to be pretty widespread.
I agree with that assessment, and the state of Maine is actually putting it on the ballot to increase the pay for personal care workers.
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Cleburne?
Well, I'll just add to that. Prior to my mother's death, I was her primary care provider, and trying to find a care attendant to come in and care for her when we would be at work was extremely difficult. And to find qualified help was even more difficult because the wages in the state where she lived was so much lower. So I do think that this is something that if we want to recruit talented people and capable people, they need to be paid.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and this, are there any issues with the wage increases outside the DWRS framework? Maybe staff could help us.
Madam Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, I don't think, I mean, we're separately addressing the DWRS formula, and I don't think this, well, it's included in here, so yeah, that might actually, yeah, it's on top of, and that might be an issue, or outside the model adjustments are problematic. We might have to find a way to work it into the model.
And we're going to
as part of the cost, the base weight, the competitive workforce factor.
We're going to have the agency give us some expertise on this. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alex Bartolik. I'm with the Department of Human Services. The disability waiver rate system has components, and one of them is around wages. And if the legislature changed what they felt was an appropriate wage in Minnesota, that is allowable. We don't believe there would be an issue. It's not adding something that doesn't have any basis of justification. It does have some justification.
Okay, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I was going to ask just kind of went right out of my brain.
Might need a personal care attendant soon.
I might. You know, I was looking at, I know what I was going to say. I was looking at the bill, though, and I'm a little concerned about all the different components that are interlocked in other programs. You know, we do an awful lot, as well we should, to take care of people that need that help. But they're in different silos. Would that be a good way of saying it? Anyway, but my concern is that we make sure that Mr. Bangsberg and I have talked about this many times, that we make sure that when we have a PCA that comes in, it isn't that they are trained. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the training isn't so formal. What I have learned is sometimes the training is just how to be really observant of what that person needs, what they're, because they can't all talk. They, you know, just understanding the client that you're taking care of is so important, whether it's nursing home or at home. It just, that concerns me that we make sure that people are trained. It comes real naturally to some people and others not so much. So, and I believe Chair Schultz, yours does have has training requirements when we're serving somebody with longer hours.
Representative Considine?
Again, I'm really hopeful that both of these bills will go forward. I think the Representative Schultz bill in, Chair Schultz, excuse me, bill in the long term is more the answer. Mine is for the short term to get things started. The way that I first got interested in this, it was my mother, and I talked to numerous young women that were taking care of her and would say, you have a gift, a real talent. Are you planning on making this a vocation? And they often, almost 100% looked at me and said, I have children, I can't. I need to find something that pays better. We need to have the training. We need to have the dignity associated with these jobs that they deserve.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Keel, in House File 1225, there is training specified. And I've heard from clients that the PCAs trained under this side of the system receive much better training. The training's better than on the waiver rate system. So we're going to try to improve training on both sides. Okay. But thank you for that comment. Any other questions from members? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Representative Considine, for presenting the bill. I'm glad you finally got a hearing.
Oh, thank me too.
So thank you for bringing it forward this year, and hopefully we can take some action on improving the wages of PCAs. So this bill, I'll renew my motion to lay it over for possible inclusion in the division report, and you're on your way.
Thank you.
Okay, the next bill we have Chair Loeffler is here to present House File 763. And it looks like you have a couple testifiers as well. Is there an amendment? Do you have an amendment for your bill, Representative Loeffler?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have an amendment that just changes effective dates, as I recall. Or maybe not. Sorry, it's a DE1.
So I'm going to make a motion to lay over House File 763 for possible inclusion and offer the amendment, DE1 amendment. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment so the author can get the bill in the shape she needs it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, amendment adopted. So Representative Loeffler, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You should have in your packet, either with this bill or the next bill that I'm offering, this House Research Brief Summary. And if you look at the front page, you'll know you can see clearly the issue that I'm trying to address. And that you'll see that in the table on the front page, we have made great progress in expanding eligibility and access to affordable health coverage through our medical assistance program to families, children, and others above 100% of poverty and gotten rid of asset limits for them. But the exception is people over age 65, blind, or who have a disability, and they've been left at 100% of poverty. And required to have an asset list of $3,000 for an individual or $6,000 for a couple. And that is a real barrier to people being able to both afford the cost of living and to be able to access the kind of health care that they need. Obviously, people only apply for medical assistance when they need it. Because of disabling conditions, they might need the personal care attendance that you were just talking about with Representative Considine's bill. And so this bill would phase in our ability to this one is on the spend down. So, okay, let me tell you about that. So, okay, now this is the first step of eligibility. This is if you make under poverty, which is $1,012 or something dollars a month. If you earn under that amount as a senior or a person with disability, you can be eligible for medical assistance. If you earn $5 or $10 or $15 over that limit, and many people with Social Security, long-term disability insurance payoffs, other sorts of sources of income slide above that, do they get to spend that excess amount on their medical care and go to 100% of poverty? No, we currently require them to go down to 80%. Actually, it'll be 81% in the future. It's got a future effective date to 81% of poverty, which is a little over $800 a month. So we punish those people who have actually planned and contributed, and we tell them that even though you contributed to Social Security or you paid for those long-term disability insurance premiums, you have to live at a lower standard of living than anyone else. And it just seems it's a very unfair burden. It's a huge burden on the health industry because they have to spend that, quote, excess dollars. It's hard to believe you have excess dollars when you're talking about $1,000 a month. But you have to spend those excess dollars on health care. And that begets a game of, well, do you pay the pharmacist that and turn in that receipt, or do you pay the doctor, or do you pay that hospital bill? It creates a huge amount of paperwork and problems in the provider community, but I'm not bringing this forward because of those bookkeeping problems. I'm bringing it forward because I think we should step up and honor people who have contributed throughout their life to our community as seniors, or those who have just gotten an unlucky break in life and developed a disability, such that they need to retain medical assistance to meet their basic needs. And it's a five-year phase-in because the cost of this, and when we've looked at it in past years, is quite high. and I'm being realistic so that we get a fiscal note that can give us something to start with. And with that, I'd be glad to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. And we do not have the fiscal note, I believe, is not ready. And so we can look at that in HHS finance. Are there questions from members? Mr. Berg, do you want to comment on that?
Madam Chair, there's a pending fiscal note. It was delayed somewhat because of this amendment, which is necessary because of the how fast DHS and Minute could actually implement this. Just went in on Friday, I believe it was Thursday or Friday, and so that's still pending. And on the next bill.
Looks like you have a testifier. Why don't we have your testifier?
Sure.
Introduce herself for the record and then proceed with her testimony.
Hi. My name is Rebecca Preston, and I'm a citizen advocate for the Brain Injury Alliance. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm here to testify for House File 763. I would really like to look at you all in the eyes while I'm reading this. However, because of my brain injury, I can't remember anything. Again, my name is Rebecca Preston, and I live in Golden Valley. I have lived with a brain injury since 2005 when I was T-boned by a drunk driver. I struggle with a cognitive disability, which keeps me from being very organized as I want to be. I'm thankful for the CADI waiver through medical assistance that I have been using for the past 14 years. This allows me to have an ILS worker who keeps me organized, and she interprets my mail for me, which I oftentimes don't understand. Before my accident, I was an avid reader. I read 2 to 3 books a month, both fiction and non, and I wrote short stories. Today I don't write or read because I can't remember the beginning once I get to the ending. I played the piano mostly by ear. I ice skated. I drove and owned a car. Today I can't do these things because the part of my brain that knew how to do these things got destroyed. Because I have lost so much, it's very important for me to remember that I can do some things, like advocate for people with disabilities to have a better life. Here's my financial situation. I receive $1,123 a month from Social Security Disability. I also receive $500 a month from my Special Needs Trust. Because I earn more than the poverty level, which is $1,012, not very good. I have to spend down to $820 a month, which is 80% of the poverty guideline. I do this in order to keep my medical assistance and the services that I receive through them. After my rent and spend down is paid, I am left with $300 per month to decide which bills I'll pay and where I'll get my next meal. For the first time in 14 years, I am living in a subsidized housing where I pay a third of my income for my rent. I can rest a little bit. 4 years ago when I started to talk about this pen down and that the percentage needed to be higher, I was left with no money after paying my spend down and my rent. I supported myself with the food shelf, which has very awful choices, unhealthy choices. Today I'm left with about $300, and I realize that not everyone is as lucky as I am to have subsidized housing. I'm grateful for all of the work that my legislators, Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance, and former Governor Dayton have done to lower the spend down in 2017, but we still have a long way to go. Please show support for people with disabilities. The spend down and complexity of medical assistance makes it very difficult to proceed with life and give back to the community. With more of my own money in my pocket, I could become a taxpayer again. and continue to live independently. Please don't say you stand for people with disabilities. Show that you do by voting for House File 763. Thank you for all of your time and listening to my story.
Thank you, Ms. Preston. Any questions to the bill author or the testifier? No. Concluding remarks, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you, Rebecca, for sharing your story. Part of why I got inspired to even identify this as a problem was some years ago I had a constituent who was a professional nurse and cared for others. Unfortunately, a complication that was totally unexpected in a medical procedure left her with a brain injury such that she couldn't return to that work, and she had to spend down the $300,000 that she had managed to save for her retirement and try and live on less. At that time, it was less than $800 a month, and knew that she would not be able to maintain her house long term with those kind of that kind of an income. And it just seems unfair that we leave these people behind and ask that they give up all of the resources that they have worked so hard for and earned, and then not give them even a decent standard of living so that they can afford to grocery shop.
Okay, thank you. So House File 763 will be laid over for possible inclusion. On to your next bill, House File 1046. Is there an amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
do you have an amendment?
And this, again, has a DE-1 amendment to meet the computer programming expectations.
Okay, so I move House File 1046 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Long-Term Care Division Report, and we're going to have, I move the DE-1 amendment. All in favor of the DE-1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, amendment adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what this bill does is it increases the MA income standard from 100% to 125% over a five-year period. So that persons with slightly higher than poverty incomes can qualify for medical assistance.
It looks like you have a testifier.
I do. Welcome.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and committee, my name is Eric Melke, and I live in Apple Valley. I'm a citizen advocate with the Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance, and I'm here to testify in support of HF 1046, increased income limit for medical assistance. I received my first brain injury when I was 3 years old after contracting meningitis. I had a near-death experience at the hospital on Christmas Eve in 1971. Then in my early 20s, I was in a car accident and I received a traumatic brain injury or TBI. My brain injury have caused me to struggle with my mental health, and it has taken me years to become independent. Now I'm happy to say that I can drive, work, fish out of the lake of the woods. These things bring me joy. Medical assistance pays for medical bills, and services providers. I'm on a brain injury waiver that pays for a variety of things like my case manager, my ILS worker who helped me keep independent, and now me stay independent. However, medical assistance income limits keeps me in poverty and affects all areas of my life. The current income limit for people with disabilities in Minnesota is only $1,012. That's not enough to cover my rent and my bills here. Due to my brain injury, I had thousands of dollars in medical bills from before I was able to get coverage through MA. It's hard to budget money when there's not enough to go around. I took out two credit cards to pay my rent, utilities, and buy food. I had to make incredibly difficult choices about what I had to go without. I was forced to go to food shelves to eat, borrow money from my family, and I was even homeless two separate occasions. I still have medical and credit card debt that I'm working to pay off. I feel like I'm not allowed to earn enough to get ahead. Medical assistance helped me to get treatment and services that I needed, but the income limits keeps me in poverty from being a taxpayer again and from being independent in every sense of the term. Thank you for hearing my testimony. Please support House File 1046 and raise the MA income limit for people with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mielke. Thank you for testifying and advocating on the behalf of you and others. Representative Wachler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I think this is just a matter of basic fairness in how we treat similar populations across the age span, and I think we've all worked hard to eliminate age discrimination and discrimination against people with disabilities, and I think it was never intentional. It was just that advocates for others were able to move other groups forward faster, and now it's time for these populations to catch up.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Cleaborn.
Well, I would just like to say, Madam Chair, in listening to both of these testifiers on these two last bills, the thought that came to my mind is, by keeping these levels so low, how much are we increasing the medical costs from the chronic stress of just trying to figure out how to juggle your expenses? So I would ask that we take these into due consideration as we go forward with our major bill, not just from a dollars and cents, but from an overall physical, emotional, and mental health standpoint, too. It's really important that this be addressed. Thank you.
That's a really good point, Representative Cleaborn. Thank you for bringing that up. Other questions from members? Are there other testifiers in the audience who would like to comment on this bill? Seeing none. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you have something to add, Mr. Murphy?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee. Yes. Okay. I work as a PCA worker, and the one thing is that this kind of conflicts with the living standard, the homes I get paid as a PCA. And lots of times I only work part-time. And I have children and a lot of bills to pay. And I also get this. I owe Social Security $64,000. And I pay $150 a month for the next 15 years.
Wow.
Because I was over.
Because you were making too much in income, and so you had to spend that down so you pay into the Social Security system? Understandable. Well, hopefully we can address that fact. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to renew my motion to lay this bill over. Thank you, Representative Wachler.
Thank you.
Okay, next week we have a full agenda. We're going to be hearing about the nursing home value-based reimbursement system. We're going to hear the elder care bill, House File 90, and then a couple other bills on the agenda. So we're going to have our meeting start on Monday, March 25th at 9 a.m., and we have as much time as up to noon that we need, and we're going to meet in room 300 north at the state office building. So next Monday, March 25th, meeting at 9 a.m., room 300 north of the state office building. We'll send an email out, definitely. Okay, any other business? Seeing none, the division is adjourned.